Good evening and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. I'm excited to be joined tonight by Jen from the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Jen.
Thanks, Michael. Nice to be here again.
Great. Great to have you here. So tell me about parents and children and African children and all of that.
And all of that.
All that together.
Yet another brainchild of Living Compassion. It's actually really exciting. So originally, it kind of came about from some conversations both Sherry and I had with people in our lives. You know, my sister has a child and a good friend of mine has some kids. And, you know, Sherry talking to folks that she knows who have children. And that they were really, really interested in the work in Africa. And interested in it, you know, for the same reasons everyone else is interested in it. But also really interested in it for the sake of their children.
Uh-huh.
And I think a big thing, you know, something that had a really big impact on me was that as I think it was this summer's trip, Sherry and I were flying back, and unbeknownst to me, my nephew was being born, and he was being born a month early.
Oh, wow.
And it was fine. He needed to be in intensive care for several weeks and, you know, all kinds of scary tubes and that kind of thing. But there was never any question that he was going to be okay.
Yes.
And it just struck me so deeply that if he were in Cantalomba, there would be no question that he would not have survived.
Yes.
And from that, I think so many parents have that sense of wanting their kids to have to realize, parents, let's say, like my nephew's, you know, mom, so wanting him to realize, to grow up in a world, how lucky he is to have what he has,
yeah,
without a feeling of guilt or he shouldn't have it or, you know, basically without having self-hatred get a hold of it.
Yes.
You know, because you hear, like, eat all your peas because there are children in Africa who are starving, that kind of thing.
Yes.
Which is true. Children in Africa are starving, but that's to have children here feel guilty about that or have to deprive themselves in some way is so not the point, of course.
Yes. Yeah.
In the same way that I feel like one of the things that's really fun about Living Compassion is it's not about I have to give up what I want so that someone else can have what they need. It's more like, okay, well, how can we get creative here and figure out a way so that we all have what we need to survive, so that we all have what we need to thrive.
Yes.
And so in talking to a bunch of, it started out with some moms, there was this one mom who went on the website, she loved the idea of partnering with a child. So she went on the website with her four-year-old daughter, and her daughter picked out the person to partner with.
Yes.
And she said, you know, mainly I think she picked him because he's 4 years old. And she said, oh, just that, oh, he's four, I'm four, you know.
Yes.
And so together they made a little scheme where they wanted to send him some money so that, you know, the mom explained that this little guy didn't have enough to eat and that he wasn't able to go to school. And, you know, in a very simple kind of way, she explained the circumstances of his life.
Yes.
And so this little girl was, you know, as all, you know, little people are, oh, you know, it just moved her. Gosh, I want to help mom.
Yes.
And so I think actually you guys talked about this on the radio show a while back. But so anyway, they dreamt up the scheme of, you know, going around and asking their friends if they would be willing to give money to help this little guy, and that this little girl was going to paint rocks in exchange for, you know, so she's painting rocks for Africa and giving rocks to her friends and family. And meanwhile, they donate money to help this little guy.
Yes.
And what was fun about it was this mom said that she was just so, the little girl was so lit up. She was so excited about it. She would go into daycare and tell everyone about it. And what she realized was that her life was being transformed in being exposed to that.
Uh-huh. The child's life.
Yes, the child's life.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, you know, I'm not a parent, so I don't know, but I can imagine it can be complex and, you know, not sure. How do I present to my child that there are children in the world whose lives are in danger because they're not eating enough? You know, that's kind of a, you don't want to scare them. You know, you don't want them to feel like the world is a scary place, and that to have a way to be able to participate in that in a way that feels really good, that feels really loving and sharing and open and all of that.
Yes.
So that's where the idea of moms and kids for kids came along. Of, you know, because the other thing is there's a number of moms in this country who are, you know, bright, well-educated women who have chosen to be at home with their kids.
Yeah.
And love that choice, and at the same time would love to have something to put that creative, intelligent energy into.
Yes.
And so what we're looking at is building a network of parents who are like that, who want to participate in assisting the kids in Cantalumba, and having their children here in the United States be a big part of that effort. Like, you know, have them come up with the ideas, have them come up with what they want to do for the fundraising. And quickly we realized that it actually needs to be parents and kids for kids, not moms and kids for kids, because there were some of the first people who stepped forward and said, oh, you know, we want to do that in our family, we're dads.
Yeah.
And so we've broadened it out to be parents and kids for kids.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. So there's going to be a network of parents mm-hmm. who would work together and come up with their own ideas for fundraising and bring their kids energy and enthusiasm and really, yeah, really open up to the possibilities of supporting the kids in Africa as well.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, you know, not even sure at this point exactly how it will look other than really putting it out to the parents and the kids to create it. I mean, it's one of those things, it's exactly, actually, as I'm saying that, I'm realizing it's an exact parallel to going into Cantalumba, where, you know, we have some basic ideas of what we think the development might look like in Cantalumba, but guess what? We don't live there. We're not there on a day-to-day basis. So the ideas that are going to work the best are the ideas that are going to come from the residents in Cantalumba. Same thing here. You know, I don't have small children, so I don't know. But we're just beginning to put the word out there to parents to say, hey, what do you think? You know, what might work? What would be fun? You know, would you be willing to captain an effort in your area, that kind of thing?
Yes, sounds great.
Yeah.
And the thing that's coming up for me as you were talking, and I'm not sure I can articulate this, but it's becoming conscious of what's going on in the world without letting self-hatred get a hold of it,
exactly.
Which I think is what you said.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's so true. I mean, we know how critical that is for us as adults, for sure. And, you know, in a way, what a gift to have a child to do that with, because that's their natural inclination.
Yes.
And so, and we want that for them. You know, it's again, it's that it's easy for me to see, I don't want my child to feel guilty, even though in a way I'll indulge guilt for myself. Well, but I should feel guilty because I really shouldn't, you know, whatever
exactly.
It is.
Yes.
But we won't. It's like we won't allow that for our child. I don't want my child to feel guilty. And so in a way, it assists us in getting past that perhaps wall of self-hatred that would be there. And, you know, I just want to do this fun thing, and I want it to be fun for my child. I want it to be exciting. And so that's how I'm going to go at it, you know, how I'm going to go about it.
Yes, yes. I see, as you're talking, a big projection exercise.
Yeah. Exactly.
Which is, you know, this thing is so important for my kids, and there's somebody else here too who needs this also.
Yeah, exactly. And I just think so fun for kids to relate to some, you know, back to that one first little girl I was talking about, to relate to someone who's her age, you know, all the way around the world, you know, just has a completely different life from her, completely different circumstances, but they're both four.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I just think it's so fun because they have so much in common.
Yes.
And what a neat thing it is for them to participate in each other's lives, really.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Reminds me of pen pals.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. And I hope that, you know, I hope that'll be a part of what we come up with, what parents help us come up with is, all right, so we've got this fundraising effort. Now, what might be a fun, simple way that we can get some communication back and forth between these groups of folks?
Yes.
Yeah, because, again, I just think it would be such a broadening, heart-opening experience on both sides.
Yeah, heartwarming. Yeah,
yeah, for them
definitely.
To be able to do that. Yep.
Yeah, and if people wanted to get in touch with you with this project, how would they go about that?
The email address is easy to remember. It's africa@livingcompassion.org.
Okay, great. africa@livingcompassion.org.
Yeah, yeah. And we're, you know, we're really looking for people who have ideas and people who are wanting to step forward and jump in and maybe, you know, make some level of commitment for themselves that they want to take on an area, you know, maybe a group. Like, I know one parent's talking about doing something in their preschool, you know, doing a little preschool-wide effort, you know, that kind of thing. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, exciting. Jen, you know what I've learned from Living Compassion and my practice over the years is really there's nothing holding me back.
Yeah.
Really,
yep.
Nothing.
Yep. Yep, there might be a story in your head that wants to tell
yeah.
you this won't work, that won't work, but in fact there's nothing. It's an illusion.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, and that participating is, in my experience, the number one way to get past that illusion that there is some reason why this can't work or I can't do
uh-huh.
it or whatever. Jumping in and actually doing it and realizing how fun it is. I mean, that's one of the things. It's, you know, creating this network of parents and their kids, making this effort is really just another way to get support from each other as we do awareness practice, as we participate in life.
Yes, jumping in with both feet.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Jen, thanks so much for warming up the show tonight.
My pleasure.
We'll talk to you soon.
Have a great show. Bye-bye.
Okay. Good evening and welcome to Open Air. My name is Michael Gray and I'm excited to be joined tonight by Melinda from the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Melinda.
Thank you, Michael. It's very nice to be here.
Great.
Something of a surprise for me, and I imagine for folks who are listening.
Yeah, it's great to have you on the air.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm guessing you heard a little bit about the conversation that Jen and I had.
I did, and you know, while I was listening to you all, I had two things arise for me. One is that I have a 9-year-old great-nephew, and I was thinking, gosh, why hadn't I thought of that before? I bet he would really enjoy participating.
Yeah.
And also how more and more our practice is one of lit-upness.
Say that word again?
Lit-upness.
L-I-T. Lit-upness.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
That, you know, the Going Beyond Karma class and all of the work that Living Compassion is doing in Africa is just so that to participate is to be inspired and to really come alive in a way that these kinds of projects offer to us. And it's just, you know, and to walk through the conditioning to the other side where pretty much it looks like anything is possible.
Yes, so walking through conditioning to the other side and having the experience for ourselves that anything is possible.
Yeah, and that we can each have the sort of ongoing experience of being excited about our lives and excited about our participation and, yeah, like that.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
It is. It's an extraordinary opportunity.
Yes. Melinda, we have a number of callers here.
Oh, very fine.
Okay. First caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Melinda. This is Jen in Pennsylvania. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
Hi, Jen.
It's nice to hear your voice.
Thank you. How are things in Pennsylvania?
Okay. I'm sort of panicking at getting on. I've noticed that sometimes I'll be looking at all these things and really struggling and identified until Tuesdays. So I suddenly feel fine, like the conditioning just backs off, so I don't want to call, I think.
Right, it's all very quiet, and I'm centered, and gosh, what was I so worried about?
That's exactly, now I'm feeling, gee, everything's fine. I can't imagine why I would want to call. So,
yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, well, and it's also always fine to just call and say everything's fine.
Yes, yeah. Well, I've been looking at a couple things, and one is just, it's kind of, I've been trying to get out of the content, but I seem to be stuck in the content, so I don't know, I'm just having a content situation that I'm just having some trouble with.
Uh-huh.
And it's just, I have a new position that I'm doing, and a coworker that I've worked with for a while, and the relationship was never great. It just seemed to be a person that I didn't really click with, and there was always a little something funny there. And then she's now assisting me. I'm considered like a lead teacher for this role, and she is the assistant. And the first time that we worked together was a couple of weeks ago, and I had told her to feel free to jump in. And what it felt like happened was that she actually took over. But I've been seeing just a lot with that, because big issues in my conditioning are insecurity and control. So you know, I'm sure that she's pushing all those buttons for me. I can't quite figure out exactly what's going on, but I'm working with her again this weekend, and so there's a lot of, you know, just talk coming up and wondering how to handle it. And like I said, I have had a hard time stepping back to see where to even go with it, because I'm really stuck in this strong reaction that I have to her.
Aha. Yeah, which can tell us a number of things. I mean, you've already kind of doped it out that there's some kind of identification going on for you.
Yeah.
Since there's this strong reaction. And perhaps some projection.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure.
Just because those are always the things that seem to go along with being identified and having some content that causes some strong reactions. And is that something you're being able to look at?
The projection?
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely, I mean, I'm sure that there's projection. I think, you know, like I said, it goes with the, I think I projected that she seemed to be what I wanted to be. She seemed to be really kind of grounded and calm and offered these great teachings. And as the whole thing unfolded, I was, you know, not able to be those things at all, because I was listening to the voices in my head that were telling me, you know, she's doing so much better than you, that kind of thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, so putting you in the illusion of a one-down position, and then
exactly.
You have the feeling that somehow she's actually taking over.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and then start wondering about how to deal with working with her in the future.
Yes.
And what's your sense, Jen, of what would be kindest for you? What would be a kind way to approach working with this person that brings in this response?
Well, what I've been thinking about, but I just am, you know, not. I don't want to make choices just out of urgency and everything else that are going to affect other people. But, you know, I thought maybe I could, you know, just let her know that since I'm new in this role, I'm having, you know, just some challenges and kind of getting settled into that role. And it would be helpful if I had a couple of these classes that I just did myself, and there are some other projects that she could do. It feels right now like if she's even in the room, the conditioning is going to get so strong that I'm going to be lost in it. So that felt like one way that I could go. But again, I don't want to be affecting her and asking her not to be, you know, there when I'm pretty sure that this is, you know, my stuff, not her stuff that's going on.
Right. And whether or not you're going to be affecting her and how is one of those things that is so out of, you know, the possibility of control.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
True.
But it sounds like it would be helpful for you to be able to say, you know, gosh, I'm new at this, and I really, you know, feels like it might really help me to just go in there on my own and see how I do, rather than have her come in and be your assistant in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
kind
of what you're looking at?
Yeah, that's what's coming up, yeah. I'm just not sure about where that's coming from, so I wanted to, you know, try to get a little clarity about where that came from before I took any actions with it, you know.
Right.
It was, for a while, I thought, okay, I wanted to react right away, of course, after all of this happened. There was all the urgency around that, and I knew that I didn't want to come from that place, so I've been trying to just sit with it and see what comes up. But that sort of rolled over into getting tortured by it. Like now it's just playing over and over. And it feels like at this point, it would be kinder to just take some sort of action and try to make it as kind as I can and then go forward from there, you know.
Right, right, and see how you do and kind of be able to sit with it through the process.
Yes.
And something that you said that I just sort of heard was that it's difficult to think of being there doing what you're doing with her in the room because of what it sounds like what you might be projecting she would be thinking.
Yes.
Is that kind of what happens to you?
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because those can be really good places to do, you know, turn to the voices that are translating for me what the other person is thinking. And
right.
Say something along the lines of, is that so?
Yeah.
Because, of course, you know, how can we possibly know? But I hear that it really, that having that process go on for you really puts you in the place of feeling, feeling way less than comfortable in the situation.
Yeah, it was such a strong response. I mean, I knew that it was, you know, it was really disproportionate. I mean, it, you know, wasn't really such a bad situation, but it must have hit on some, you know, some big conditioning or something for me because I was just, you know, I was a wreck for days after, and you know, conditioning really got a hold of me around it, and so, you know, I'm just now there's all this stuff kind of building coming into working with her. Again, so I'm just wanting to set up like the kindest thing, as you said, that I can, and
mm-hmm.
and I guess just try to support myself then, because I can see that for whatever reason, it's just this fertile place for conditioning to really get me.
Yes, and as you were saying that, I was wondering if you have one or two favorite really favorite reassurances that really hit home for you that might be called in as part of your support plan.
Yes, yeah, I think that's going to be really helpful. And actually, even just hearing you say that is reminding me. I mean, I think in my less identified moments, I think that this doesn't even have, probably has nothing to do with her, actually. It's just, mm-hmm. you know, all being projected there because I actually went into this new job with a lot of reassurances and, what I saw was just conditioning spent the whole, it's a weekend thing, you know, and spent the entire weekend just picking, trying to find the thing that would make me, just get me identified and get me lost. And it finally settled on her and just blew up into this thing.
Yes, yes, yeah. So it could be an extraordinary workshop. And kind of already is, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's true.
In doing things like, okay, so this person is one of my subpersonalities.
Mm.
So how can I, you know, sort of get to know this subpersonality and learn how to work with it in a way that doesn't take us both down?
Like she's a subpersonality for me or what comes up in response? Okay,
Yeah, she's got all these things. Well, no, what happens is when you are in the same room as she is, all these things come up.
Yes.
Somehow in response to something that you see or experience because she's around.
Yes.
So it could be now what is it exactly? And where it's sort of that scientific approach. Where does the reaction start? And what does this person who's reacting need to hear from me? And, you know, that sort of, just for me, in situations that have that much emotional commotion, it can be so helpful to really focus inwardly, to really, you know, look at what's going on inside, down from the head, away from the voices.
Mm-hmm.
No?
Yeah.
And to use it as a workshop opportunity to, all right, what all can I find out about the process that I do? Because it sounds like you've caught on to this is familiar. This is not new.
Mm-hmm.
What else can I learn about what this process is?
Mm-hmm.
That rubbing the hands together, going into the challenge.
Yeah, that's a good one to remember. It feels like life is really putting this in front of me because there are many more things that are coming up that I'm going to be involved with her in now. And one of them is I'm graduating from this program that I've been in for like 5 years and had a lot of excitement about it. And it turns out that she's also going to be graduating at that same time, which I didn't know. Oh. And the reaction has just been huge, but I'm thinking, okay, there must be an opportunity here because I'm really getting a chance to just she's everywhere right now, so something's there to look at, I guess. You know?
Yeah, life is just kind of dropping her onto your plate at every moment. It sounds like
it's true.
Yeah. So I think to be able to do that, internal exploration around everything that comes up. Just feels like a way to, to disidentify a little bit, so that you might actually have a little space for being able to catch on to more pieces of your process.
Yes, yeah.
And it sounds like you don't have a choice.
I don't have a choice. Right. It's definitely, like I said, life is putting it out there. So I guess, I'm just going to.
So it must think that you're up to the challenge, Jen.
It must, yeah. Okay, well, thank you so much for the thoughts and some things to work with. And we'll
check back, huh?
Okay, all right. Thank you.
Good luck.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jen. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Melinda, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we'll be right back.
Alrighty.
Porchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air.
Michael, it's so nice to hear that our sponsors are back again.
Yes.
And they've never really gone anywhere, but it's nice to be able to hear their music.
Yes, it is wonderful, and I'm crossing my fingers here because I'm not always sure what it is that makes it work.
Uh-huh.
Linda, we have several more callers here lined up.
That's great. Let's talk to some.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Christine in North Carolina.
Hi, Christine.
Hi. I just wanted to check something out with you. Last weekend, I went to a one-day workshop with Sherry, and it was a really great workshop, and I was so happy and excited to see her, and it was a good workshop, and I was really thankful for it, and something happened to me, and it appears, it felt like I got like a huge dose of self-hate. And so I guess I'm calling because I'm wondering how this happens. It's something, of course, I've felt before. And it's just so sneaky how... I can be happy and excited to be somewhere, and then I can be sitting there feeling, down and zapped of my energy. And I think that a lot of, negative voices were putting me down until I just felt really beat up.
Mm. And did that happen in the course of the workshop or afterwards?
It was happening during the workshop.
Ah.
It probably started before a little.
Mm-hmm.
But, it was happening during the workshop. Like, and I, and I, And I don't hear all the voices clearly, like how they're putting me down, but definitely I could notice little ones sneaking in.
Mm-hmm.
Just things putting me down so that I was worthless, you know, to that degree.
So there's some, is it that there's some process of comparison that goes on for you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely I noticed that was happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when I'm not identified, of course I don't want to do that. And I don't, I never consciously want to compare myself to other people. But yeah, I think, yeah, that does happen.
Yeah, yeah.
The conditioned response, I guess.
You're there in this room full of people, and you're having a wonderful time. And then what I project is that a little voice somewhere way in the distance starts in with, yeah, but you're not, look at that person. They're, And what's the matter with you that you're, and I don't know if that's exactly what goes on for you, but that's certainly a common way that conditioning will use comparisons. You know, if we don't hear the voice start in, we can be in that place, it sounds like you got into, of just sort of starting to feel bad and not knowing why you're feeling bad. And then that kind of can snowball, especially, it seems, if we're having a good time.
Yes. Especially when I'm having a good time. I guess just in the situation of being around a lot of other spiritual people, you know, it was easy to compare myself to them, that I'm not as spiritual or as I'm not as something.
Yeah. Well, a way to look at it that I find helpful is that it's conditioning that's doing that, not you. That conditioning knows that, I would suspect, knows that your spiritual practice is important to you.
Yes.
And so it's going to use that. That's a handy thing to use to beat you up with, that, look, you're just not, you know, you're not up to snuff with your spiritual practice. It takes stuff that's valuable to us and turns it on us.
Yes, and so, and then I'm getting beat up for not seeing it, for letting that happen.
Yeah.
And then part of me is saying, well, you know, I would have not let it happen if I could have, but somehow it happened, and then I felt bad, and then I was, like, in the muck.
Yeah, and conditioning lives on. Springs or something, because it'll start him on one side of it and about, you know, how you don't compare and you're not up to snuff on this one. And then it'll bounce over to, and what's the matter with you that you're listening to me? You know, it doesn't
feel
like that. But that's the effect, is it beats you up, and then it beats you up for having let it beat you up.
Yes.
And so it's really helpful to find a place of just unconditional positive regard for oneself in those circumstances.
Yes. Yeah, so
however
when
that
I...
works for you.
Pardon?
However that can work for you.
Mm-hmm.
That you're
okay.
doing a great job, or, you know, You're in exactly the right place for you in this moment, or you wouldn't be there.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was during the workshop that I was feeling, you know, self-conscious and just kind of down.
Uh-huh.
And so I guess whenever I become conscious that I'm feeling down because something was beating me up, then I can jump in with all the reassurances and kindness to myself,
yeah,
as much as possible.
Yeah, and I'm just not going to let you beat me up. You know, you can just stop beating me, or you can go on over there in the corner, but I'm not going to receive those punches.
Mm-hmm.
there's also for the next opportunity you have like that, because I imagine this would very likely happen again when you go to another workshop or another talk, mm-hmm. is to talk about it in the workshop.
Yes.
You know, wow, I just realized I'm getting this beating.
Yeah.
And then very likely have the experience that a dozen other people in the room are having the same experience.
Yes. Yeah, it occurred to me to do that, but I didn't. I didn't do it.
Yeah.
I didn't say
anything.
Well,
and that's another place of, that's okay.
Yeah.
That's perfectly okay. Because conditioning will want to use that, they see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Just complete kindness, you know, it's perfectly fine.
Okay. So this is just what happens, and when I notice it, then I turn to complete kindness.
Yeah. Kindness never fails us.
Yeah. Okay, that's what I'll do.
All right.
Thank you very, very much.
Thanks for calling in, Christine.
Okay, good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Christine. Kindness never fails us, does it, Melinda?
It never does. It's, yeah, it never does.
I'm not sure why that has occurred to me, but definitely over the past several days or the past week, it's really, you know, kindness is the only response to just about anything.
Yeah, it takes the sting out of everything that stings. And there is just something, I don't know, there's something quite miraculous about the being able to turn to kindness under any circumstances.
Melinda, we're going to take a quick sponsor break.
Okay.
And we'll be right back.
Righty.
The Zen Blues Quartet is a collaborative music project celebrating life and the music of the blues.
From now until December 31st, Zen Blues Quartet will be donating 20% of all revenues generated from CD sales to Living Compassion and Open Air Talk Radio. This music project exists because we learned that how you do anything is how you do everything. So we get to make great music, you get to listen to great music, and together we can support the fantastic works of Living Compassion.
Zen Blues Quartet is proud to sponsor Open Air Talk Radio with Sherry Huber, as we firmly believe that the quality of your life is dependent on the focus of your attention.
What a life, what a life.
Please visit us at www.zenbluesmusic.com for more information about our project.
Welcome back to Open Air. Melinda, we have at least two more callers here.
All right. Very fine.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is George from Pennsylvania.
Hi, George.
Hi, Melinda. Hi, Michael.
Hi, George.
It's been quite a while since I called in. It's always something, you know.
Mm-hmm. Always something.
Sometimes on your end, sometimes on my end. But anyway, here we are. I'm very happy.
All right. Very good.
Happy to be here. And I wanted to second your lit upness experience,
mm-hmm.
Which is something I've been experiencing pretty consistently lately. And the practice of kindness just all around, I mean, of course to myself at all times, just naturally translates to the rest of the world.
Yeah, it's reminding me of, I think it's today's quote from the Transform Your Life pages by Eleanor Roosevelt, who I will paraphrase, talks about if you're not a friend to yourself, you can't be a friend
right.
to anybody else
right.
in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, it becomes just completely environmental.
Mm-hmm.
I just happened to think I was somewhere today actually singing to Alzheimer's patients in a facility, and they had this big fish tank there, and I was waiting for everybody to assemble, so I went over to see the fish,
mm-hmm.
and I just projected this kindness toward the fish, or just this appreciation for the fishness of the fish,
uh-huh.
kind of, and the fish came right over. I mean, they just came over, and they came
yeah.
kind of right up against, practically up against the glass,
uh-huh.
and were just there with me.
Yeah.
While I was there with them.
Perhaps appreciating your humanness.
So life has been like that, and
it really is. It's impossible not to be lit up under those circumstances, isn't it?
It's impossible. It's just a natural way to be, it seems. Not that I ever realized that. Not that that's what I was taught, but.
Well, and not
through,
that's what conditioning wants for us.
Right.
You know, we have to burrow down through the conditioning to get to the lit upness that is our true nature.
That is our true nature. Yeah, absolutely. And
yeah.
It's been very thick and heavy and ponderous in my life. And I mean, I can remember. Not that long ago, a few years ago, and for decades in my life, where I would go through fairly long periods where I had a very active wish to die,
mm-hmm.
you know, to just not to take my own life. That wouldn't be my style, or I would be too embarrassed or too afraid to do that, but just that, couldn't I get sick, you know, get really sick and just be kind of taken out of the picture?
Yeah, yeah.
And
looking back on that now.
Yeah, looking back on that now, it seems the feeling is as though I'm looking back on this turbulent, that somehow I've managed to get myself through this turbulent river or turbulent, river, somehow managed to get myself up onto the other shore and kind of looking back and seeing all this turmoil, all this, all of what I've gone through, and just feeling enormous gratitude. Just enormous gratitude for, you know, waking up in the morning and being alive.
And just wanting to be alive.
Just simply another gift of another day.
Yes, And I would imagine, I hope anyway, really appreciating the guy who made that swim and who is in the process of making that swim through the turbulence to the other side.
Yeah, I really do.
Yeah.
And of course, I'm always suspicious that ego, I can see ego lurking around wanting to come in and kind of own that or possess that as a thing, you know, making a thing out of it.
As an accomplishment.
Wanting to be special,
yes.
You know, wanting to get credit for this success, you know.
Yes.
And it's interesting to kind of watch that. There's that tendency to see that.
Yeah, because then if conditioning can get that kind of a foothold,
right.
It's usually not too far.
Not too far.
Around the next corner to the failure.
Yeah.
And that had to be in quotations.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's feeling like the practice has been just transforming, life-changing for me. And it's gone from kind of a hope that, oh, maybe this will work, and maybe if I keep at it, this will, you know, something will come of this, and, mm-hmm. you know, times of discouragement and years, really, of striving and trying and struggle and mm-hmm. and sometimes breaking through and then, you know, being discouraged again and so on, and having this intellectual understanding of how it all works,
mm-hmm.
which
yeah.
has changed into kind of a visceral state of being.
You're having the experience, yeah.
Living the experience, just living it.
Yeah.
I don't think for one minute that if I was to let go of formal practice, that it wouldn't be long before it might, it might begin to fall apart. But the formal practice creates a platform for just kind of the living practice. Just, you know, living it every moment with whatever you're doing or not doing or whoever you're with or whatever's going on or whatever the external circumstances might be, it's just a continuous opportunity for practice.
Yeah, and the formal practice is what really helps us continue to remember.
Yes.
To practice.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely critical,
mm-hmm.
To do the daily yoga and meditation and listening to the archives on a daily basis and doing the daily, you know, transform your life and doing the reflective listening and the Living Beyond Karma class, which actually the Living Beyond Karma class seems to extend the practice more into the whole mainstream of the day.
Yeah.
It's not a half an hour of meditation or whatever, which is equally as wonderful, but it actually, you know, extends into the whole flow of the day.
Yeah, it's that place of bringing our lives into spiritual practice instead of
yes.
vice versa.
Right, bringing our lives into spiritual practice.
Yeah, with that constant, all those different ways of keeping our attention in practice.
Yeah,
it's quite a gift.
Oh, it's just, It's something that I would find very difficult to believe just a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
That I, you know, would feel that, oh, well, you know, some people are able to do this, but not me. You know, I'm never going to make it. I'm always going to be stuck in this, continuous suffering and struggling,
miserable condition.
Go on.
Yeah. It's. I was seeing as you were saying that when we're in the conditioning, it's really hard to imagine that life could be as wonderful as it is.
Yes.
Once we have the opportunity to step out of conditioning.
Right.
Because conditioning
right.
is never gonna.
Yeah.
Describe that to us.
No. You don't. You don't quite believe it until you are it.
Right.
I guess that's one of the reasons I wanted to call in, is just to really lend my encouragement to everyone that is going through this process, that it really, really works.
It really works, yeah.
Even though it's hard to believe and it's, you know, there's all kinds of doubts and fears and struggles and everything else, if you make it a priority in your life, which is what I finally realized, that this is the priority.
Yeah.
This comes before anything else.
Yes.
And it infuses everything else. You know, it's just fundamental. And it wasn't until I really realized that this is a priority. I don't care how long it takes. I don't care what it takes. I don't care how much practice it takes. I don't care how many hours I put in. I don't care. This is a priority.
Yeah, making that level of commitment that has obviously served you well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
So much, much, much appreciation for you and Michael and Sherry and Dave and
George
and everyone and George and all of us and life.
Yeah, and the fish.
And the fish.
Yeah. That's great.
Never forget the fish.
Right. Okay, thank you, George.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for joining us, George. You're listening to Open Air. Tonight we have the privilege of being joined by Melinda, monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Melinda, it really does work.
It really does work, yeah.
And the fun thing for me is I don't have to believe that it works or it doesn't work because I just have my own experience.
Yes, we don't have to believe a thing, do we?
No.
And it's that practice of just showing up.
Yeah.
And taking as many opportunities as we are able to avail ourselves of, and then being able to have the kinds of experiences that we can project George is having.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And I was talking with Sherry a couple weeks ago about immersing ourselves in the practice.
Yeah, the immersion. And what we watch is how the Monastery in Living Compassion create the opportunities for us to immerse ourselves.
Yes.
With
yes.
the Living Beyond Karma being one of the most recent, along with the One Thing Revolution and Collective Listening Buddies, and the list could go on and on and on.
Yes, the list does go on and on and on. And to me, that's what's so wonderful, is that we can immerse ourselves in all these many ways.
Yes. Yep. Yep. Really bring our lives into our spiritual selves.
Yes. Melinda, let me give out the phone number here.
Okay.
Toll-free in North America, it's 888-4-SANGHA. That's 888-472-6442. And then you'll be asked for the call ID code, and that is 15406 pound. And then you can just hit 1 pound, and then you'll be in the queue here. Melinda, we have another caller.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
It's Steve from Albany, New York.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, Melinda. Let's see. I'm calling back to report in. I talked to Sherry probably 2 months ago now.
Okay.
We were looking at how the challenge of staying centered in spite of everything else, other developments in my life with the people in my life I'm most intimate with.
Mm, yes.
They say something that might be triggering.
Staying centered with the family is one of those giant practice opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I had an assignment which was just to notice. I don't even remember what the assignment was, but I remember the results. It was to notice who's present when that triggering is happening and just to stay aware of it, not to necessarily try to stop it.
Right. Check in with maybe how old the person is and
mm-hmm.
what their beliefs are and things like that.
Yeah, I had some insights on that phone call that it was, you know, a young person who wanted to be nurtured.
Mm.
Right. And so when anything came that that person perceived as not being nurturing, that was a threat.
Yes.
And
it was kind
somebody
of
an older
issue.
Somebody older and more aggressive came in to yell and, you know, help me stand my ground, so to speak, although I don't really serve it.
Allegedly protect the one who was not being nurtured.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now I remember the assignment. It was when that happened to basically say, wait, I need to stop and check in with the process that's going on here.
Yeah,
I might
to
not talk
disengage
well.
From the conversation with the external person.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I can remember, numerous times since then, there's been ups and downs, you know, it hasn't certainly been 100% of the time where I was able to basically provide that nurturing for the one who wanted to be nurtured that it perceived wasn't coming from my partner.
Right.
In the moment.
And was that, and so that could happen on those times when you were able to do it. It could happen in those moments when you were having this conversation and perceived the not nurturing, you could step out of the conversation and turn toward yourself, it sounds like.
Yeah, and you know the interesting thing, the past week or so, it's gone back to the old pattern, and I think it's good that I'm finally making the call now because it's reminding me.
Yeah, so a little conditioning kind of oozes its way back in.
Yeah.
And this project that you'd been engaged in, it sounds like, kind of slipped out of your awareness for a little while.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It did. I was probably too busy with among other things, you know, ego was telling me I was busy with the Living Beyond Karma class. Didn't have time for that anymore.
Yeah, I just don't have a second for practice because I've got to do this class. Yeah, that's great. conditioning is so amazing.
Well, there's this interesting undertone that it has, which is it's almost like whispered to me.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I think of doing anything that's, you know, maybe a little hard or a little threatening, and it's, oh, you know, you won't be able to do that. Don't worry about it. Don't even try. And then under that is, if you try and you fail, you'll feel bad, right?
Yeah.
And you'll beat yourself up. So don't do that. Of course,
yeah.
In the really end, I'll beat you up.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Because if you try and you don't make it, there's
mm-hmm.
always the possibility of, hey, good job. Let's try again. Or
let's take
a different tack. Or, yeah. But conditioning doesn't want to suggest that.
And, it's like all pervasive in my life. It's running, you know, pretty continually.
That background voice of basically you're not up to the task.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Yeah, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Or you're too tired or there's too much to do, so you might as well not do anything.
Yeah.
Right? You know, that it would take 200 hours to put the house in order. So
don't
spend an hour getting the highest priority stuff done because why bother? It would take 200 hours.
Yeah.
And that's one of the discoveries I've had is, well, okay, so spend an hour and you have fun doing it. And
exactly.
The house isn't perfect, but hey, it's nicer than it would have been without that hour.
Yeah, and spending the time that way was a heck of a lot more nurturing than spending that time listening to all the reasons you shouldn't be doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The empowerment of defying the voices.
Yeah. Well, I think I learned a lot there. My daughter's room had turned into a, you know, more like a giant pile of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you couldn't even walk. And she's only six, so it was really overwhelming for her to clean it.
Sounds like she's having some comments on this.
Yeah, she's saying, all right, I'll talk about me. She's going to sleep here and I'm rubbing her back.
Uh-huh.
I decided right at the beginning of the class I was going to clean her room. I was going to do it a little bit at a time each night at bedtime.
Mm.
And I'll tell you, I could feel at times I was, you know, there was this like overwhelm, ready to burst out sobbing.
Mm.
Kind of, this is too much energy coming up. And I just stayed with it and just kept cleaning and stopped each night after 20 minutes or so.
Uh-huh.
Or 15 minutes and took care of myself and, you know, made sure I got to bed on time and that it didn't turn into I started it, now I'm going to keep going.
Ah.
And then, you know,
that's what conditioning would have done with all that energy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, within 2 or 3 weeks, the floor was clean and we vacuumed the room for the first time in a long time. And
the space was available to vacuum.
The room is still vacuumable now about a month or two later.
Yeah. And how was that for you, Steve, each evening when you'd done your 20 minutes and, you know, made those little pockets of progress?
It was wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, it felt so good to not have to finish, to not have to feel bad that there was more to do.
Yep.
You know, to have things come up, voices, whatever, this is too hard, you can't do this, to have emotions come up, and just to, you know, be with them and, you know, either pause for a moment or just keep going.
And to stay with yourself, it sounds like.
Yeah, and you know, I see there's some carryover into other things, bigger, you know, scarier things. I don't know if I've quite had that carryover yet, but I see the potential.
Sure, because it just makes sense that if it works here, maybe. And it's such such wonderful modeling for your daughter.
Yeah.
We can take off little chunks of things, and we can be kind to ourselves, and we can actually get things in a way that we can vacuum the floor.
You know, it actually has started to come around full circle. Sunday night, my wife and I were at a kind of an interesting concert. Singer is kind of an activist, too. There was someone there presenting with her who was more of an academic, and they took turns doing sets, him lecturing for 5 or 10 minutes, and then her doing 3 songs back and forth. And then at the end, there was a, you know, the audience had a chance to interact. And I went up and shared an experience of how her music had provided an opening for me and inspired me to start a, what was initially as a discussion group might end up, you know, being more than that, and kind of asking, so, you know, what are your thoughts? Where can I take it from here? And the one thing I heard was, you know, was, you know, being honest in public is such a gift, because I had really told a personal story.
Yeah.
Other people were kind of in this place of, other people might have told some personal stuff too, but, you know, some other people are more in a place of like asking a question or like, you know, more formal, or you can imagine that people put on their public face. And as I was driving home, I thought, wow, you know, there's something there. You know, I enjoyed that. It was fun.
Yeah.
It was healing for me. It served the other people there. It inspired them. You know, this is a way I can contribute to the world. And it's bigger and, you know, kind of scarier for ego than cleaning my daughter's room.
Yeah, scarier for ego.
And that's where I'm at right now.
Yeah.
Wondering where to go with that energy.
Well, and it sounds like on some level you know. I mean, it came
from when
you walked up on stage, I bet you didn't have to debate very much doing that. Or if you did, you still found the willingness and the presence to do that.
It did not take the huge amount of courage to push through the fear and the pounding heart like it used to.
Yeah. There was the opportunity, and there you were, up to the moment.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That's great. Very inspiring.
Yeah. Okay. That's my check-in.
Great. Well, thank you so much. Sounds really fine.
I'll explore that a bit more and call back sometime.
All right.
Look forward to hearing it. Thank you, Melinda.
Thank you.
Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome, Steve.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us tonight. You're listening to Open Air. Tonight we have the privilege of being joined by Melinda, a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Melinda, I loved how Steve was talking about taking a big task and just a little bit at a time.
Oh, yeah. And resisting having, because it's so clear that conditioning could easily come in and just, you know, run him into the ground and then beat him up the next day for having stayed up too late or whatever.
But yes.
The way that we all have experienced it. But instead, to just do it in little bites, and very inspiring.
Yes, definitely. And I could really relate to him sharing about the overwhelm and too much, And I know for me in my life, there's a lot of content, seems like, more than there has ever been, it seems like.
Yes.
And my karmic tendency is similar in that sort of overwhelm, too much stress.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just an increasing faith or an experience or a practice of how is that helpful? You know, what is that contributing to the things I want to accomplish in my life?
Yeah, and to you, to your own well-being.
Mm.
Because it wants to suggest that you're not up to the task.
Yes, it does, absolutely.
And you keep proving that, in fact, you are.
But it seems like there's an incredible resistance to, wow, you just show up and then show up and then just show up and then for
yes.
this and then that?
Yeah, yeah, yep, yeah.
And it's quite inspiring. I'll give you a little anecdote before the show today, is there was kind of a last-minute thing at work, and someone needed some help and was in a difficult situation. It took me an extra few minutes to get home, get ready for the radio show. There were several last-minute things for that,
uh-huh.
and a lot of details, and just one after the other. Just, okay, yeah, I forgot that. Okay, I'll do that now. Oh, yep, I got to give this person this information.
Uh-huh.
Got to do that. And, you know, and the minutes are ticking by, tick, tick, tick. And it's, to me, it's just a tribute to practice of, okay, there's a lot going on, and what's the next thing to do?
Yes. Yep. Yep. Yeah. It's staying out of the panic mode that is
yeah.
guaranteed to take us into pushing the wrong buttons or
whatever. Yeah.
And just being, okay, what's next? What's next?
Yeah, just such
yeah.
tremendous gratitude for being able to support and encourage that skill and that you know willingness to keep showing up.
Yeah, and you know what I'm hearing in what you're saying, Michael, or projecting onto it, is that there isn't a need to leap in to control everything, which probably would have been a disaster.
Yes.
There was just, okay, what's the next thing? Okay, we pick up the phone. Okay, next thing.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, instead of trying to cover all the bases.
Yes, yes.
Trying to cover all the bases.
Yes, and I could see where it could have jumped in because I'm kind of on a short time schedule to get from work to get ready for the radio show.
Mm-hmm.
And this person looked really in a difficult place. And it would have been very easy for me to say, you know, I've got a radio show to do. I can't stop. And
yeah.
But I didn't.
Yeah.
And everything still worked.
Yeah. And it would have, if your conditioning is anything like mine, and I suspect it is, it would. If you hadn't stopped, they would have beaten you up all the way
yes.
home. Would have beaten you. Would be beating you now.
Yes.
But I can't do that because you saw and you just did what was needed in the moment.
Yes. Melinda, it's been a great privilege and pleasure to do this with you.
It's been wonderful to be here. Thank you, Michael. Delighted to hear the sponsor music. Congratulations.
Me too. I can't tell you how much.
And we look forward to next week's show.
Me too. Thank you, Melinda.
Uh-huh. Good night, Michael.
Good night.